are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Well, I was going to drop a joke in here sometime that I was going to go see the Dead and Company at Citi Field, and the Mets weren't going to be playing.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
But now I've specifically upped my game of trying to make it look like I'm actually doing something instead of, you know, sitting around and watching Jeopardy like I normally do.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Welcome into Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Prince, joined by Ray Kuhn tonight. How are you doing, Ray?
I'm good. How are you, Ben?
Doing good. I'm excited because ESPN finally did their updates, and now Fantasy Baseball is back up on ESPN, so that's exciting. It's a move in the right step, or a step in the right direction.
It only took them how long?
A couple weeks. A couple years, even. They're just, it's so slow. I mean, I'm pretty sure someone posted today from Fantrax that it was about time that they opened, so I found that kind of funny.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've already completed, like, 6 Fantrax drafts. Easy. Well, waiting for ESPN to open.
Yeah, that's a problem, but, you know, and apparently to add Ohtani, you know, it took a couple weeks just to add his name in there, so I can understand the difficulty.
Well, at least they had the dual eligibility on, like, Yahoo, so.
Yeah, let's see. I mean, for all we know, they could have got rid of Derek Jeter. Oh, they did. They finally got rid of Derek Jeter. So,
wow, you know, what about King Griffey Jr.? What about King Griffey Jr.? Is David Ortiz still there?
You know what? I think that David Cohen's still in the system, actually. So
nice.
We're also joined tonight by Evan Peterson. How are you doing, Evan?
I'm doing fantastic, Benjamin. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. You excited that pitchers and catchers have reported and everything?
Yeah, I'm excited. I do a lot of work on the computer, and it's kind of nice to have 2 screens, so I can have one where I'm pretending to work, and the other one where I can just watch all of the, the throwing sessions and everything like that are being posted on Twitter. So it's kind of nice. It's blow off work season.
Yeah, isn't that typically all year round for you though?
Well, yeah, but now I've specifically upped my game of trying to make it look like I'm actually doing something instead of, you know, sitting around and watching Jeopardy like I normally do.
Oh, okay. So you're actually doing work to make it like you're working.
Something along those lines. Yeah, I don't want to get too much into the process. Don't want to show you exactly how the hot dog's made.
Well, yeah, we don't want your boss that could potentially be listening to this podcast to find out that you're not doing anything.
He's not listening to this podcast. We're good.
Why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached on Twitter?
At FWFB on the Twitter machine.
What about you, Ray?
Ray_Kuhn_28.
That can be reached at BBrandisFWFB. Today we're going to be talking about shortstop gentlemen, and we're going to be doing our continuation of the tiers system. So why don't we just jump right in? Our first tier, all of us have Carlos Correa, Trey Turner, and Francisco Lindor. Evan and I also have Corey Seager. So, Ray, let's start with you. What brings Corey Seager out of the first tier for you?
The thing for me is I'm not necessarily concerned about the elbow or the back or any of those nagging health issues he had last year. There's a lot to like about Seager's game as far as the contact is just about average, but the hard contact rate is extremely high. He shows the power, good plate skills, but I'm not sure that his home runs are ever going to get out of that 25 or so range. And the thing with Correa is Correa has 30 home run potential, if not 35. He has higher RBI total than Seager. Lindor has the power as well and gives you 15 to 20 stolen bases. So for me, Seager's kind of just a step below because, well, he's a very, very nice player and a very good player with some upside. I feel like his upside's a little more limited than Correa or Lindor's, and Lindor comes through at the stolen bases and Correa's bigger RBI threat.
And what about you, Evan? What do you think of Corey Seager enough to put him into the first tier?
I mean, I think he's just a shade off of, like, what Francisco Lindor could really do. Like, Lindor does have an obvious bump in what you would consider, like, a speed profile. But if Seager stole 9 bases and Lindor stole, you know, 13... Is it that negligible? I don't necessarily buy into the power output for Lindor as much as maybe some other people would. And as Ray pointed out, the hard contact for Seager does definitely set him apart from Lindor. Lindor's thing was he was just pumping the ball into the air. The fly ball rate was career high for him. And I know he's on Twitter and he's looking all buff and shit with his bleach blonde hair. My favorite tweet was somebody called him Francisco Lindor. That was absolutely hilarious. But it's kind of one of those ADP things, which is, would you rather take Lindor and like a Luis Severino or whoever's going to be there for a pitcher in the third round, or would you rather take a Bumgarner and Corey Seager? Like, what kind of pairing do you prefer in that department? And then as far as Carlos Correa is concerned, I think he's ahead of these two, no doubt. So his name was kind of intermixed with these, but I'm more apt to draft Corey Seager because there's more batters in that second round where Lindor's going that I'm more likely to pounce on.
Yeah, as for me, I also have Carlos Correa as the top player of all the shortstops. I have him ahead of Trey Turner, which I'm sure surprises some people. But in regards to Corey Seager, I just think that provided that he stays healthy, which I understand that the back issues can derail some people's views on him, and obviously we've seen what has happened to Kershaw, and that's also in L.A., and you know, back issues are nothing that you want to really mess around with, but you understand that what you're going to get with Seager is a good amount of power. There's good lineup around him. You know, they got rid of some players from last year in Adrian Gonzalez that was, you know, playing bad at the beginning of the year. They have Bellinger now for a full season. They have Turner hopefully healthy for a full season. There's a lot of damage that this lineup can do, and I think of where he's falling in ADP, you should be able to get him at a good spot if you've already taken care of like a pitcher and an outfielder or one of your other infield positions, and you need someone who gives you some all-around stats. It would be nice to see him, you know, chip in closer to double-digit steals, but that's probably not very likely. I think that there's a better chance of Carlos Correa actually getting to double-digit steals this year than someone like Corey Seager. So,
yeah, no argument there. Real quick, I know you didn't want to get hung up in this first tier, but I just kind of need like the take of Trey Turner from you. And just for, you know, this is a shortstop podcast because I have the 5th pick in my Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational League. And I'm hoping that Turner falls to me there, but I don't think he's going to. He went, I believe, 3rd in both of our staff mock drafts, and he went 4th, I believe, in a ITL mock draft I did last night. So you're not in at Turner at that point, I assume?
You know, it's not that I'm not a Turner fan. It's just me personally, I don't have him. If I was in those first 4 picks, he'd fall to you because I don't have him as a top 4 player for me. But what I've said on the Nationals podcast, and Ray can back me up with this, at least in terms of the fact that I said it, I expect him to run less this year if everyone's able to stay healthy, because last year he had to create on the base pass as the leadoff hitter with no productive number 2 hitter up until, you know, Howie Kendrick was somewhat productive at the end of the year, but even then you still had to get a little creative on the base pass. So Trey Turner got a lot of running last year, and I understand that he didn't run a lot at the beginning of the year because of the injuries that he had. And it's not that he's not going to be able to potentially steal 50 runs. I feel less secure about it with him hitting behind at me and right in front of Bryce Harper. Because if Ian's on base and Harper's up, the likelihood that you're running is significantly less, especially if Harper's able to have another pretty good year, because you expect Harper to be able to do some damage. You don't have to have him run as much. The runs and some of the pop and the RBIs could still be there, but if he hits, you know, only 35 steals on the season, he clearly does not give you that value of where you're looking for him as a top five pick.
Yeah, I just don't think he's going to give you that. Like, that month, I don't have a splits pulled up. I think it was June or July. It was the most steals in a month since, like, Jose Reyes back in 2007. And I just think you kind of break the season down into weeks, and if he steals two bags a week at, what is it, 29 weeks over the course of the season or something like that?
26.
That's 60. Is it really? I, you know, just from, you know, setting up leagues and commissioners and playoffs and shit like that. But that's two steals a week, which I totally think is in his repertoire for as quick as he is.
I think that it's in there. The problem with me is because I don't see a way that I can necessarily guarantee that he's going to be able to get that 50 plus steal, it drops him a little bit in value for me. And
is it because of the injury? Or because of where you're arguing that it's more of a lineup thing as opposed to like him missing time?
Yeah, it's more of a lineup thing because I feel with Eaton, as of right now, Eaton's projected to be the leadoff hitter and Harper's going to hit third. Last year, he got a lot of those steals when he came back and he was the leadoff hitter and there was Jason Worth basically hitting second and there was zero productivity out of there to get him into a scoring position. So he had to create for himself, which is why he was running so much. With Adam Eaton there, you have a good base stealer, but if he's on first base and then Turner gets a single, you're not going to have him run unless you're planning on doing double steals. So there's a lot of downside to that. And then also the fact that Harper is hitting directly behind you, you may not feel as inclined with him to run. And we don't even know how the manager, as a new manager, is going to have him in terms of how much they're going to give the green light. Obviously, if we're going to give a green light to someone, it's going to be Trey Turner. But the problem is because of everyone coming back healthy in the lineup, can you really guarantee that he gets 50 steals? Because that's what's propping up his value. If he only gets 40, is he still a first-round pick for you if you knew that he was only getting 40 steals?
But, well, sorry, Ray, go ahead.
If he's going to get up to 20 home runs and he's going to be scoring easily, I think, 100 runs, if that's the case, and if everyone's healthy, then yeah, he probably still is, because you're going to get probably around a 290 average. But I mean, like Evan said earlier, we're talking about two steals a week. I think that's very doable. And while I see, obviously, your point with he's batting in front of Harper, Harper's still only going to get a hit 30% of the time. So there's still the other 70% of the time that, with two outs and Turner on first, say Eaton gets out, Harper strikes out or flies out, and they want to get something going, they're going to send Turner with two outs if he's on first base. So, I mean, I think two steals a week is easy. And I think if he was batting leadoff or it was a different lineup, I think we'd be talking about close to the 65 to 70 to 75 steals for Turner. So I think 50 is on the conservative and realistic side.
It can be. Why don't we move into the second tier so we don't get too hung up, like I was saying, on that first tier.
My bad.
It's okay. In that second tier, obviously, Ray has Corey Seager. We all have Alex Bregman. Evan and I also have Elvis Andrus, Gene Segura, and Evan also has Xander Bogaerts. So let's start with Ray. Ray, what prevents Andrus and Segura from being in that second tier for you?
Well, first of all, just one quick Turner note. I'm going to drag us back for a minute. Someone posted this to Twitter, Blake the Mega, I believe it's the Nationals projected lineup via District on Deck, has Turner batting sixth, which I think is just mind-boggling to me. But so I had to share that with the class, but now, back to our regularly scheduled programming. What was the question?
What prevents Andrews and Segura from being in your third tier as opposed to the second tier?
What makes them be in my third tier? For Andrus, I don't expect him to repeat the home runs. I think he's more of a 10 to 15 home run guy. The home run fly ball rate last year was out of whack for him. It was an outlier. I understand part of that is change in approach, things like that. Everyone is going for the launch angle and the fly ball. But I'm just not sure it's sustainable for Andrus. And I think we have to worry about the strikeouts with him. The contact is going to prop up the batting average. He's still going to run, get 25 stolen bases. But for me, it's really just not buying the power. And Segura, he's really a 20 to 25 steal guy. And that's about where my value for him ends. He's not going to – again, he's going to hit around 290. There's not really much in the way of power. He's going to score runs. Him and D. Gordon are going to run all over the place at the top of Seattle's lineup. But then again, it's the same logic that you're using with Turner. If Gordon bats first and Segura bats second, how much is Segura really going to run?
Yeah, for me, I mean, I still feel secure about Segura hitting that 20 steal mark on the season because I feel there's a pretty easy chance for him to at least get 20, which is, you know, less than one a week for the entire season, basically. I understand that there's not a ton in terms of power. You know, if he hits 15 home runs, you'd be happy. If he gets 70 RBIs, you'd be ecstatic. He's someone who could be able to put up a 90-95 run season while hitting 300 with 23 steals. The reason I have him in my second tier is just because the consistency that you're going to be able to get with him, and as you'll be able to read from our draft guide kit when that comes out, I have him in my second tier because I trust the players that are in that second tier to be able to be consistent from year to year with what they bring to the table as opposed to the players in my third tier. A player like Andrus, I guess I'm expecting that there's still a good amount of stolen base in his legs and that he's still going to be able to score 85-90 runs. If he doesn't hit for that amount of power, would I be shocked? No, because I really didn't expect it to happen last year. I think he could settle in at, you know, 14, 15 home runs, and that would be okay, especially because the ball is kind of juiced now, and, you know, he's not playing in with any humidor, so as of right now, I still kind of expect him to be somewhat consistent from year to year with what he's going to be able to give you, and as a top 10 shortstop, that's why I expect him to be able to give. What about you, Evan?
Yeah, sorry, I was going down rabbit holes while you were talking there. Looking at, you know, kind of the fly ball revolution for Elvis Andrus against, you know, left-handed pitching, where he was 38.5% fly balls, and he'd been, like, you know, 24% for his entire career. Against right-handed pitching last year, his home run to fly ball was almost 10.5%. It was less than 3.5% for his entire career up to that point. So, yeah, there's obvious regression for Andrus. Like you guys talk about, you know, 13 to 15 home runs. I would take the under on a number like that. I think the one thing that I do like about Andrus is the guaranteed speed and the bump up in lineup for him to the top of the order. And then as far as Segura, like, everybody was right that the move from Chase Field out to Safeco was going to, you know, kind of dampen his power statistics. It definitely did. The injuries kind of sapped his speed on the base paths. So are you saying that you're more worried about Trey Turner losing out on steals based on his spot in the lineup than you are about Segura losing out on steals given his new spot with D. Gordon in town?
Personally, I'm more worried about Trey Turner losing out on steals just because people are expecting 50-plus steals from him. People are expecting, you know, 20, 25 stolen bases from Segura. And he's been consistent with doing that, and I still think that it's a capable number for him. Yeah, you got D. Gordon there, and I'm obviously less expecting him to hit his projection than he would have if D. Gordon wasn't there. But because Edmonton missed so much of last year and there were so many injuries to the Nationals lineup and there was so much unproductive play out of the two-hole when Turner was hitting the leadoff, I really don't know how the change of him going from one to two in the lineup with everyone being healthy will really change. For Segura, the lineup hasn't changed other than the fact that D. Gordon's there and now he just gets moved down a spot. So, obviously that will make some change, but at the same point in time, to only expect 20 stolen bases isn't too far-fetched. What about you, Ray?
Yeah, I think 20 to 25 is really it on Segura. And I mean, even regardless, he's shown that to pretty much be his ceiling, I think, in his career, except for those one or two years in Milwaukee. And I mean, so, I mean, as a player, I like Turner a lot more. And I'm thinking that Segura is, that if we're talking about 50 to 60 for Turner, either way, to me, as long as he gets 50, I'm hitting first-round value. For where I have to draft Segura, he really has to get 25 to 30. And the fact that he's not contributing as much in the way of power as Turner does, getting those 25 to 30 steals are more critical to me than with Turner if he gets 50 or 60 because Segura is not contributing as much in the other categories.
Evan, why don't we look as to why you have a player like Xander Bogaerts in your second tier?
I just think that Xander Bogaerts' season last year can kind of be written off because of, you know, the injury that he said he probably, you know, should have taken a little bit of time off with. It's kind of a pin the tail on his home run total. And I mean, his steals have been fairly consistent. The batting average, I think everybody would kind of expect to go up from the 273 it was last year. His overall numbers as far as, you know, like his fly balls and his contact percentage, the injury was obviously a huge issue for him. And I just don't necessarily see why a guy that we were drafting, you know, second, third round needs to take a hit all the way down to, like, you know, between 80 and 100 overall, where I've definitely seen him go in some drafts.
Yeah, I think the more I think about it, the more I look at things this draft season, the more I'm getting back onto Bogaerts than I honestly thought I would be. I mean, it's a great point that he was somebody going second, third round last year. That, I mean, reality, the guy's 25 years old. What really has changed? He had the injury last year. He probably should have taken some time off. I mean, I think we have, but again, we also have to expect for the fact that he's not going to be much more than a 15-15 player. I think his speed would account for maybe 20 stolen bases, but given the lineup, given what we've seen so far from him, I'm comfortable expecting 15, and I think the power kind of limits him to about 15 homers. But we have an above-average contact rate. He's going to come close to 100 runs, come close to 300. He still hits too many balls on the ground for my liking. I'd like to see a few more line drives. But I think overall we do have a solid player that I think could be a value selection this year, and he's kind of, I think you have Xander and then you have Didi, and then you kind of start to turn where you have a lot more questions than answers, I think, with some guys at shortstop.
Yeah, I can support that. For me, the drop-off of what happened with Xander last year and the inconsistency in terms of the power department makes me not be able to put him into that second tier. He took some steps back in terms of RBIs and average last year as well, and obviously that came from moving around in the lineup so much. But obviously now that J.D. Martinez is signed, he's going to be expected to bat no higher than fifth, I would say. And the likelihood that he's going to put up big power numbers or, you know, get back to a 300 average, you know, it's kind of tough to say exactly just because of how bad last year was in terms of what people were expecting from fantasy. I still expect him to be a top 10 shortstop, and obviously he's going to still give you steals, gives you a ton of runs, and if he's able to get a bounce back in the RBI in the average department, he's going to be well worth the payoff. The problem is I'm just not sure exactly if those power numbers are going to come back or if he's going to barely hit, you know, double digits like he did last year.
Yeah, the one thing, and you definitely take a look at like his swing percentage. He was obviously swinging the bat less. He still got 94 runs on a, you know, a .273 batting average, and we're expecting the batting average to A, go up, because most projection systems have him at, you know, .285, .290 if you're looking at Zips and Steamer, and B, the lineup is just going to be better all the way around. So even if you don't think that the power is for real, if he's hitting lower, more steals, I just think there's ways for his game to compensate and for him to be a value where he's being drafted.
I mean, the thing to me that's interesting, too, is he hit 21 homers in 2016. He had a 152 ISO. Last year, he hit 10 homers. He played appearances, obviously, were more in 2016. He had 719 compared to 635 in 17. But the ISO only went down to 130. So, I mean, homers dropped by close to 50% factoring in plate appearances. The ISO only dropped 32 points. So, I mean, obviously, the hand was part of that issue. So, I mean, maybe he does get back up to 20 home runs. I'm not sure he gets more than that, though.
It's going to be very tough for me to expect him to just come out and, you know, hit 20. And I understand a player like Elvis Andrews has done it, but and that took a while. But at the same point in time, in a season where a lot of players were hitting home runs over the last 2 years due to juice balls, you saw Bogaerts go down in his power, and you saw him decrease in a lot of stuff. That's not something that's overly appealing to me as a fantasy owner. I mean, I had him coming into last year as maybe my second or third ranked shortstop for dynasty ranks, and he took a hit last year because of what he did. So.
And now, a message from our sponsor.
If you like betting, I have a deal for you. Eli Rosenfeld of Vertex Betting is one of the best in the business, and unlike many betting information sites, he gives away all of his info for free. There is no risk, no signups, no money needed to get the best betting insight in the business. Go check out vertexbetting.com and see why it beats all of the other sites out there. And if you want to try out betting for the first time, click on the Bet Now link and sign up for MyBookie /or XBet with the $45 deposit, and you will get a $50 rebate from Vertex Betting. Just tell Eli from Vertex that FWFB or Justin Mason sent you for a $50 rebate on the $45 deposit.
While we move into the next tier, Wright has Elvis Andrews, Gene Segura, Xander Bogaerts, Javi Baez, and Didi Gregorius. I myself have Xander Bogaerts, Gregorius, Marwin Gonzalez, Trevor Story. And Evan has Javi Baez, Gregorius, Trevor Story, and Marwin Gonzalez. So, Ray, I know we keep starting with you, but you keep having players in different tiers of both Evan and I, so what exactly drops Marwin and Story into a different tier for you? Because you and I are very similar in our ranks, but we're just in different tiers. So is there a reason that they are in a fourth tier for you?
All right, for Marwin, it's that I don't think he's going to get the everyday playing time that he did last year. I think the Astros are going to use him more as a utility player, and I think the home runs, 23 homers we saw from him last year, I think that's his peak. As far as what we can expect going forward, and we should drop him down a few home runs from that. I'm not sure he's going to lead the team in RBIs again like he did last year. I mean, overall, I think he's going to give you solid production. The multi-position eligibility is great. He's eligible at short, outfield, first base, and possibly more depending on your league. So, I mean, so that's obviously a plus. I think he's going to play maybe four times a week easy, if not five. He's going to fill in if there's injuries. So, I mean, I like Marwin, but he's not – there's not necessarily enough for me that he does that's really going to stand out. And the thing with Story that startles me is really just the 64% contact rate maybe we're going to see from him. I mean, I don't think much more than that. Batting average, we'll be happy if he hits .250. So, I mean, we know the power is legit. We know the power metrics as far as home run production – plays in Coors Field, that's off the charts. But, I mean, for me, he's a step above an all-or-nothing player. But the fact that I take a hit in the batting average category, and then you have to worry about streakiness at times with him, and then you don't know. I mean, I think Brendan Rodgers is still a little bit away, but I think maybe towards the end of the year, if Story gets into a slump, maybe Rodgers does come up and take some playing time from him. So that's kind of holding me back on Story a little bit.
What are your thoughts on these two, Evan?
Yeah, story. I mean, everybody kind of knows the story on him. Sorry, had to do it. Because the contact issues are a real thing. He had the big month that he broke out, and it's kind of stuck in everybody's mind. He had one other month where he jacked 8 home runs, and the rest of it has just kind of been meh. And I'm not really excited, and he doesn't really get a quote unquote Coors bump for me, although all Rockies players kind of do. Marwin is a guy that I'm not like huge on. I do think there is going to be playing time because injuries happen, and he is a very flexible guy. I just take a look at kind of his splits against right-handed pitching, where he saw the huge bump that led to his increase in his walk percentage. And you take a look at, you know, like his BABIP against right-handed pitching, which was 370, which was insanely high. His home run to fly ball rate against righties was almost 21%, and he'd never been higher than a 12.5. I mean, obviously, you know, you look at just the numbers and you see, oh, yeah, that, you know, 23 home runs that he hit last year is going to come down. But I think it's going to come crashing down a little bit further than, you know, the 16 to 17 home run range. It could be less than 15, to be 100% honest with you. And I don't think that the batting average is as solid as probably some other people do. So I'm probably staying away from both of these guys.
For me, I like Trevor Story and the fact that I expect him to have some power and RBIs, but I can't really expect him to really do much else for you. He's someone that, you know, if I'm in need of a shortstop and I don't have a lot of power at other positions, which is typically unlikely based on how I typically do my drafts, I could be looking to grab him at the expense of the average, but the likelihood that I actually end up drafting him with that type of average is pretty slim. In regards to Marwin Gonzalez, I like the multi-positional flexibility that he gives you, and I do like the fact that he does have some pop and he could have some average while chipping in, you know, 5-plus steals. It's nice to be able to have a player that you can move all around the diamond, and I think that the positional eligibility helps bump me up for him. But he and Story are borderline of where I start to draw the line in sand of where I want to have a starting shortstop. What are your thoughts on Didi Gregorius, Evan? Do you expect him to be able to have another season like with this much power?
No, I really don't. I mean, I've never been a big Didi guy as is necessarily, so maybe I just kind of missed the boat on that overall. I think that, you know, he took the step back in lefties against lefties that a lot of people probably predicted, even after the 324 he had against them in 2016. But just I don't believe in the overall quote unquote power metrics. But I do believe in kind of the Yankee bump. I just think the price point has gotten a little out of control.
Yeah, I don't expect him to have that much power, but he's clearly improved his couple seasons that he's been in New York in terms of the power. And obviously there's enough power hitters there now with Stan and Judge, plus Gary Sanchez and, you know, Greg Bird, if he's able to stay healthy, that he's not necessarily going to have to put up a ton of power, but he's someone who clearly can, and I'm not sure if it is because of juice balls, but I do think that he's going to be able to give you some decent pop from the short sub position.
Yeah, I mean, I personally like Didi, but I'm trying hard not to overrate him, to tell you the truth. Yeah, the power was there last year, but, I mean, if you look at the metrics, I'm not sure that it really supports much more than even the low 20s at most home run wise for him. And he does make contact at an elite level. He's going to have tons of RBI opportunity. So I think he's getting, I think he deserves some of the Yankee boost just based on that lineup, but I think he's going to end up getting more than he should. And I think it's either going to work the way of everyone kind of takes that into account and says, hey, I'm going to downgrade him. And then he potentially turns into a value pick. Because, I mean, if he's ranked around the, say, 10 to 15 range for people in a standard 12-team league, he could be one of the last starting shortstops taken. So you might be able to wait it out and get some decent value on him. I mean, he doesn't really have much upside like some of the other guys, but I'm not sure he has much downside either if you just resist the urge to overrate him.
Yeah, it really just depends on, you know, where the draft is falling. Some players could, you know, try to steer clear of him and could give you some decent value in the draft. There's a couple other players in this tier that I want to be able to talk about. Two players who I forgot to mention were Andrelton Simmons and Chris Owings, who I have in this tier as well. What are your guys' thoughts on someone like Simmons, who finally showed some promise with the bat? Do you expect him to be able to have a good offensive season again with the improvements that the Angels have made, Ray?
Yeah, I think he's going to kind of stay where he was at from last year. I'm not sure. I mean, maybe he'll pick up a few more RBIs, a few more runs, depending on exactly where he bats. The thing with me is that his contact level stands out as elite. He's going to chip in 12 to 15 steals. I'm not expecting too much in the power department. So, I mean, he's more of a really back-end shortstop one, if not a middle infield option for me.
What about you, Evan?
I love Simmons kind of more in deeper leagues where he, you know, the playing time's obviously going to be better for him. I'm not 100% sure where I think he's going to bat in this lineup. I think it's going to be lower, and I mean, it's not going to be as low as to, like, actually push him to be, like, ninth, where I would actually almost rather kind of prefer him, I think. But I've always liked Andrelton kind of as a Braves bias thing. I think he's being jacked up a little too much. I think I would rather draft Zach Cozart, and I don't necessarily know that the ADP reflects that. I can pull that up really quick. Oh, Cozart is going higher. It's just barely. But yeah, I mean, Simmons is a good guy if you're waiting, but I wouldn't, you know, specifically build a plan of, oh, I'm just going to grab Andrelton Simmons late and I can go somewhere else. I think I'd rather kind of have a better plan A.
Yeah, I think you definitely need a better plan A because there's not much upside. But Cozart's really going around higher than Simmons.
I'm looking at, I have the draft room for our staff league pulled up because I realized that you made your pick. So I was looking through that. And Simmons is 226.5. Cozart is 215. So Cozart's going higher.
Because I have Simmons ranked well higher than Cozart, to tell you the truth. That's interesting.
Does the dual position do anything for you since Cozart should be shortstop, third base?
Not really.
Maybe the bump?
I think there's more third baseman I'm going to like than Cozart, and I'm not sure that I trust Cozart to stay healthy, and I think Simmons with stolen bases.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking was going to be more of the swinger was the injury concerns for Cozart. Ben, where are you at on these two?
Personally, I like Simmons more, and I think that is because I expect him to be able to stay healthier. He has a better contact rate. If he's able to duplicate those steals and the home runs to some capacity, even if they both take a slight hit, I like the power-speed combo that he brings to the table, especially because the lineup around him's improved, so there's more RBI opportunities. There's still a good chance for runs. You know, that's one of the most improved offenses, supposedly, at this time, based on what they've added, that it should be able to help boost his offensive ceiling. So, Cozart's someone who I like too, but I don't expect him to get a ton of steals, and I kind of want to see if he's able to stay healthy. So, what are your guys' thoughts on Chris Owings? Because obviously he had a hot start last year, and, you know, then he got hurt, but now he's expected to play full time at second base, and with the trade of Brandon Drury coming today to the Yankees. There's really no one to stop him from getting play time at second. So what are your thoughts on this, Evan?
Well, you know that I'm a high guy on Owings. I think it was actually like our first regular season show of last year. We had a big Chris Owings conversation. Do you remember that? Or was that just me?
I believe that was just you.
No, I believe you and Chuck were there as well. And we kind of pegged him as a guy that if you were looking for speed as a, you know, kind of on the waiver wire as like a first thing, you could probably go to Chris Owings. I do definitely think that the playing time is going to come around given this move. Although Humidor, oh, everybody be scared. But, you know, power's not necessarily Owings' game, even though he did hit double digit home runs for the first time last year. I think that there's more than, you know, the 12 stolen bases that he put up last year. And I think they're, the batting average 268, you probably expect something right around there, but I'm an Owings fan. I dig it.
Well, yeah, I'm digging it too.
Why do you dig it, Ray?
I think we got a 15-15 player here. I mean, maybe 12-15 because, oh, the Humidor. But, I mean, he missed half the year last year or close to it. I think there was some pop. Decent enough batting average. He'll get some runs, get some RBIs. He's eligible at shortstop, eligible at second, eligible at outfield, so I like that. So, I mean, for me, I think with Owings, it's kind of – like, he's going to probably finish around the same. Actually, I'd probably peg him for a few more stolen bases than Simmons, but he's going to finish with a few more home runs and a batting average. It'll probably be similar. So to me, I'd rather just go after, you know, a few extra home runs there with the counting stats, and I think his batting average is a little more secure than someone like a Trevor Story or Paul DeJong, who are two people that I have ranked similarly in the rankings.
Yeah, and Chris Owings kind of embracing the pull ball definitely helped him out in the power department, so maybe he can continue to build off that this year.
I mean, I personally like Owings because I have him ranked high, and you'll be able to see, because I believe our rankings came out earlier today, you'll be able to see how high I am on him. And I expect that if he's able to return to those early numbers that he had, I think that he'd be a pretty good draft buy for players because there's some good power speed combo blend and he could hit for decent average. And, you know, AJ Pollock doesn't stay healthy all the time, so there could be a chance for him to hit at the top of the lineup consistently. So why don't we move into the next tier, which has Ray having Marwin Gonzalez, Trevor Story, Andrelton Simmons, Orlando Arcia, myself having Paul DeJong, Zach Cozart, Marcus Semien, Addison Russell, and Javi Baez. And Evan having Marcus Semien, Andrelton Simmons, Chris Owings, Zach Cozart, Orlando Arcia, Tim Anderson, and Jorge Polanco. So, Evan, what props Jorge Polanco up so high for you?
I really liked what I saw from him in the second half. I think as far as his draft cost is concerned, and you look at a guy kind of just factoring out the upside there, I think you're looking at, you know, possible 15-15 guy hit you somewhere. I think, obviously, the 256, maybe not too much higher than that, but even at that point, you know, 260, 265 isn't going to kill your batting average at that point in the draft. He does know how to take a walk. So if the batting average does come up, you know, his OBP could be somewhere in that, you know, 340 range, 350 range on the, as far as the ceiling. And he's got a lot of eligibility. I think on Yahoo, he's second, third, and short eligibility, if I'm not mistaken. I'm sorry.
I said, that's it on Yahoo. I feel like if you sneeze on Yahoo, you get eligibility.
I mean, that is definitely the case. Let's see. Fantrax in this draft is just showing him a shortstop. But like I said, I'm pretty sure I drafted him in that ITL mock I mentioned last night, and I'm pretty sure he was second, third, and short. So is there something that you don't like about Jorge Polanco, Ben?
No, it's not that I'm not a Jorge Polanco fan. It's just that he technically would have made my sixth tier, and yeah, I understand that he's capable of giving you double-digit steals and homers, but I'd like to see improvements in that average, and due to the fact that I think there's going to be a bunch of regression in the Twins lineup in general this year, and you know, who knows how long Sano is potentially going to be out, I'm not sure how much I really like this lineup in general that I can expect him to give me great numbers at shortstop, and you know, I would only be concerned to use him as a middle infielder anyway. So for me, it's not that I don't like him, it's just that there's not a lot of confidence I have that he's going to have significant improvement coming into this year, given the fact I expected Twins to decrease from last year.
I love the Twins lineup. Yeah, I'm not sure. What are you on?
Yeah, I don't know how much they're decreasing.
I don't like their pitching. Like, I'll go there with you, but as far as, like, you just look around the diamond, I actually like their lineup, so. Okay.
Yeah, I'm with you on Polanco. I mean, I think he was, what, 10-10 player the last 2 months of the year? So, yeah, I'm definitely on board as the lead option.
Right. What about someone like Marcus Semien? Any reason that you have him in your fifth tier?
As opposed to having him in my fourth, you mean?
Yeah, of course. That's where Evan and I have him. Clearly, that's the cool tier.
I'm missing that once again. I mean, the thing for me is his batting average, honestly. I mean, I think that I think there's some power there. I think, obviously, playing in Oakland limits some of the power production from him. I'm not necessarily too concerned with wrist injury. I think it's somewhat of an issue. I think he could be a 20 home run guy, ship in 12 to 15 steals. So, I mean, it's kind of a theme with a lot of these shortstops we're talking about. But, I mean, for me, what holds him back is that I think we'd be happy to see him hit 250. So that kind of knocks him down a little bit for me.
Do you have any desire to own a player like Semien, Evan, or is he someone who you can draft potentially if there's just no one else and you kind of need some power?
I mean, yeah, the power, he's got a little bit of speed. He actually hits better at Oakland over the past couple of years than he does on the road, just looking at the splits tool. So, I mean, he only played, you know, 85 games last year, so small sample size and random distribution, what have you. But, I mean, the batting average is the biggest drain on him. I'd much rather have him as a middle infield option than have to rely on him as a starter. But you look at, like, our 18-team staff league of awesomeness, obviously the superior league for head-to-head categories, and somebody's going to be starting Marcus Semien as a shortstop, and that's going to be disgusting.
Yeah, and I mean, to go back to Russell, to me, Russell and Semien are kind of similar, except Russell's going to get more RBIs and not really runs. Semien's going to get less RBIs and more stolen bases. So for that, for the stolen bases, I'm ranking the stolen bases a little bit higher than the RBIs, but yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they are what they are. They're middle infield options.
They're very similar players, and one of them may allegedly be a piece of garbage. That's all I'll say on that regard. Yeah, and Addison Russell, I think, kind of, you know, burned people last year. There was one league where I bought into him because I was like, oh, he's a Cub. I'll be able to flip him if he sucks. And he was so bad, I just couldn't flip him, and eventually I just ended up outright cutting him. So it's very interesting that these two are paired together. Who would you guys take? I think I'd take Semien over Russell. I think I gotta side with Ray.
Oh boy. I mean, if you look at my ranks, you'll be able to see. But I'm pretty sure
too hard.
It's for me personally, I think that I can expect a little bit more out of Semien just because at least he, I mean, Addison Russell was just so bad last year. Is there anything to make me think that he's just going to make improvements? There's been nothing in the average. The power is up and down. There's no stolen base. You know, as of right now, like, it looks like he's just not going to be able to cut it at the major league level. And sure, it could take some time for him to develop. But at the same point in time, he hasn't shown me anything over the last few years to make me think that I could at least expect an improvement for him. At least Semien showed me that he can hit for some power, even if he has a terrible average.
I mean, the second half of last year, Russell, I think, showed it a little bit. But, I mean, regardless of all the other personal issues that we're not going to touch here, because, I mean, obviously they sounded pretty horrible, he also did have some health issues as well. So I think maybe if both of those are straightened out, get a little bit of bounce back. I mean, again, he's still just 24.
While we move into the last tier, and I want you guys to each tell me one player who you expect to improve on where their draft value is now and could potentially be a good bargain on the draft table. Well, let's start with you, Evan.
Oh, man, I was going to take it the other way like I did last week. I just think a name that we need to kind of, you know, divert a little bit of attention to, so I'll use this time to do that, is Paul DeJong, however the fuck you want to say his name. I am staying as far away from this dude as humanly possible. I mean, you want to talk about guys with, you know, big strikeout potentials and, you know, don't really contribute as far as, you know, steals. I would rather have somebody who is going to go, you know, 10 and 10 as opposed to a guy that's going to go, you know, maybe 20 and nothing. Because if, you know, he does end up struggling, even that power could drop out for him. So I'm not going anywhere near this guy. I don't know if you guys necessarily share those sentiments.
I'm staying away. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm not going to own him. I would consider him as a middle infield option just based on 30 home run capabilities. He's similar to me. He's kind of in the Trevor Story range for me. He's similar. I mean, I think Story does have maybe a little better chance of keeping the job. So I mean, honestly, I'm not running towards DeJong, but I'm not swearing off drafting him completely either.
285 batting average. He had a 349 BABIP, struck out 28% of the time. And you look at a lot of the projection systems, they have him somewhere around a 260, and I think the floor could drop out even a little bit below that.
Yeah, so if you put him closer to 250, he's kind of right there with Story. So I mean, to me, they're pretty much the same player.
I mean, I like him because I think that he could make some improvements. Obviously, you know, I don't really want to hinge my draft to a player like that, but I think that where he's going is somewhat decent value that you're not really going to be able to get great value for where you draft him, because if the floor does drop out, you obviously lose value, and I'm not sure if he's really going to be able to give you anything more than the value that you currently have. What about you, Ray? Who do you think is a player that you may be able to get some extra draft value out of?
One guy that we did not talk about was Orlando Arcia, and I think of the guys, aside from really the first, I guess, like four or five guys we talked about, I think he has the most upside here. I mean, the speed is an elite tool. I think he's going to start running more this year. I think it was a matter of him getting comfortable. Milwaukee has seemed willing to push the envelope as far as stolen bases go, and Arcia certainly has the speed to do it. I think there's enough power here to kind of get started, and he's already shown the ability to get some extra base hits. So if those he's 23, those turn into some more home runs. I think we're looking at some solid upside there. Decent enough batting average. Tools are there. I mean, he's not perfect. You'd like to see him walk more. But I think Arcia is one of those guys that I'm targeting for sure.
What are your thoughts on Arcia, Evan?
Well, it's great that me and Ray are drafting right next to each other in the staff league, and we have like the exact same opinion of Orlando Arcia, so I can tell I'm going to have to bump him up a little bit. For a guy that I was already, I mean, I was a little tepid on him, you know, at the beginning of the year. I remember we had a conversation with Chuck last year. I believe it was before me and Chuck met up at the Brewers game, and we were talking about Arcia and kind of the trepidations that I had with him. But I mean, if you want to get crazy as far as a bold prediction, like Arcia going 2020, I think there's a, you know, 15% chance that might happen, which is, you know, worth making it somewhat of a bold call. And yeah, the Brewers are going to be a solid team as it is. So Arcia is a guy that, you know, maybe that's why I felt comfortable talking about Paulie D over in St. Louis, because I figured somebody would bring up Arcia since he is, you know, that good, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of talent in a player like Arcia, and obviously, you know, some people may expect him to – be able to put up another 15-15 season. You know, he almost was there last year. He just missed by that one stolen base. But he's got a lot of abilities that he's able to bring to the baseball team in general. And he's going to stay in the lineup a ton. He, obviously, he's young enough to keep making improvements. He's someone who I really like that I think could make another big stride this year. And I wouldn't be surprised if he hit 20 home runs with, you know, 17 steals and a .285 average. It would be nice to see him improve on those counting stats and the runs and RBIs. But, you know, if he's able to get up to 75 for both of those, that's a significant improvement from last year. So,
Ben, I promise you, just saying 2020 is a lot more fun than straddling that fence, brother. Come on to the other side.
So many ways we can go with that.
That's why I phrased it as such.
The player I want to talk about is Ahmed Rosario, and it's not just because I'm a Mets fan. It's just because you both took players that I would have talked about otherwise. So I appreciate that. With Rosario, you know, he's the one true stolen base potential threat that the Mets have. So there's a good chance that Mickey Callaway could let him just run wild if he's actually doing pretty well.
That you depends know, where he's going to bat.
It really does. But at the same point in time, do you really have anything to lose by, you know, if the team's not doing great? Do you have anything to lose if he's playing well and hitting at the bottom of the lineup to put him at the top and just let him kind of run? You know, there's not a lot of downside to it. And he's going to be there for a long time if he's actually decent. So if he's able to get that and, you know, get some runs and have a good average, then he could be someone who could give you some decent value. Considering I would expect that he's probably off the boards as, you know, a plus 20th shortstop. So.
Yeah, I think I have him as my 18th shortstop, and I think he's going to get 20 stolen bases, and he does have a little bit of power too, but the problem is just the contact really isn't there, and he just has yet to show the ability to take a walk. I think the ability is there, and I think the tools are there, and I do agree with you. I think at some point he's going to find his way up to the little spot in the Mets batting order, and then obviously, yeah, 20 stolen bases is going to seem to be relatively simple for him, but I also think you're going to have more growing pains with him than Narcia or Zhang even.
What about you, Evan?
Well, I was going to drop a joke in here sometime that I was going to go see the Dead and Company at Citi Field, and the Mets weren't going to be playing because I think their team is just kind of, yeah. But the one thing I will say about Rosario, and I have, you know, questions about, you know, the contact or whatnot, is he's a guy in like the Javi Baez mold, if you will. For, you know, comparison's sake, Baez swung 56% of the time last year. I think Rosario was somewhere around 55. I just lost his page that I was looking at. And like you said, why the hell not if you're the Mets? I mean, you may as well, you know, kind of see what's going on. Get him some time with the Todd father up there and give him some words of encouragement.
I agree.
So. The speed demon, the Todd father.
Evan, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
I can be reached at EvFWFB on Twitter. You can reach me in the rate and review section of this or any FWFB podcast by leaving me a 5-star review. And it's really good to break down these positions with you. It's been really great draft research. So we appreciate you guys joining us on this fantastic voyage. Slide, slide, slippity slide.
What about you, Ray?
I am on Twitter at Ray_Kuhn_28, and I am enjoying this voyage as well. It's a good time. We still have a ways to go.
Are you working on anything?
I am. I think we're doing third base next week and just working on a bunch of general fantasy baseball prep for the upcoming season.
I can be reached at BBrennisFWFB. You can find me and Eric Mackey on the Friends of Fantasy Benefits basketball podcast twice a week. You'll continue to find us here on the Wednesday show during the regular season. And just look for our articles when the draft guide comes out. From the rest of us at Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball offseason, everyone.